You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
What is going on, everybody? My name is Mark Becker. We are back here with the Rational Revolution. It is always a pleasure to be here with you. Sorry about last week. It was kind of a crazy nuts thing, but I am so happy to be here with you. And this show is going to be about something that does affect just about everyone's life. And we're going to talk about why and how and the threats to it. We're going to do if you're in the business and you did, what's a SWOT analysis? What is that? It's like something, opportunities and threats and all the whatever the heck. But we're going to talk Medicaid. And we're going to talk with Lynn Meschke. And I heard her speak at a town hall that we had. And she did this. I mean, she's going to, talk way better about this than I could. I don't have a ton of notes because this is about a time. This is an opportunity to learn for everybody here. So I'm going to introduce Lynn Meschke. We got a Medicaid expert and advocate. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am well. So talk about this. How did you get involved in Medicaid and advocacy?
I got involved in this because I have a young adult son with developmental disabilities.
Okay.
So he has been on some form of Medicaid since he was a toddler. So we have private insurance through my husband's employer, but because of the significance of Henry's disabilities, he qualifies for Medicaid. So he came into the system through Katie Beckett, and he's just sort of Katie Beckett is a program for children, and it actually isn't income based. So it's you come into it based on your disability.
Okay.
And so for us, that covered, it was kind of a secondary insurance for us. So, but it also covered things like my son is on the autism spectrum.
Okay.
So it covered in-home therapy. It covered just all of the things that insurance doesn't pay for or doesn't, deem to be worthy of coverage.
Sure.
And so he came in through that. And then we have kind of progressed through the system. And now he is an adult. And so he is in the IRIS program. And that is a program for adults with disabilities or also seniors. And for him, it covers things like his day program at the CP Center, which shout out to the CP Center, wonderful organization. But it would also be the same for individuals who are in day programs at Aspiro or Curative or any of that sort of thing. And then it also covers for seniors. So it is the coverage that allows seniors to get the support that they need so that they can stay in their home. Mm-hmm. And same for individuals with developmental disabilities. Henry lives at home with us, but there are individuals out there who have the ability to live independently. Mm-hmm. And IRIS and family care and things like that help them do that, provide them with the supports, as opposed to the old days when folks like that were institutionalized.
Yeah.
What we've learned, we've gotten so much smarter. So what we know now is that with fairly minimal supports, a whole lot of folks can live in their homes, participate in day programs or work opportunities, and be part of our community. And, as I said at the event that you saw me at, I think we're better for that. Right. I think we are better for having our seniors and our adults with disabilities and all of these individuals as an integrated part of our community.
Yeah, I think we're always better when we treat people with dignity.
Isn't that the truth?
Yes.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
Is. Well, I have a sister-in-law that that has a daughter that has severe needs. And it was neat to see her be able to do things like, even though she is nonverbal, she can go to school and she can have friends. And, there's a day program that she was able to go to. And now I think she's almost like 30.
Yeah.
And to see her have a quality of life.
Yeah, she's living her best life.
She really, oh God, yeah, she is.
Yeah, she is. It's funny because so many of them, I talk to so many siblings of adults with disabilities or parents, and they're like, oh yeah, my kid's a celebrity in his community.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
they,
right.
You know, people just, uh-huh. yeah, because it's, yes. I mean, talk about a pureness uh-huh. of heart and yes. just, you know, they just want to be part of it all. They yes. want to be right in the center and they're comfortable with that.
What was the trigger point for you getting involved in the advocacy side? As we talked with Lynn Meschke, who was Medicaid expert advocate. What got you into why I need to do something about this?
I chuckle a little at the expert thing because I wasn't previous to this. And I've talked to other parents about this who are involved in advocacy. Medicaid just worked for us. And you didn't really think about, you just sort of assumed it would be there, right? And if you are a parent of a child who's as vulnerable as my child is, you know, you live with anxiety every day. And it's a different anxiety when they're little than when they're teens and when they transition from school to adulthood and all that sort of thing. But as you get older, the anxiety, fear that keeps you awake at night is what happens to your child when you're not there to care for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was cruising along in our life. Henry's pretty stable. He's transitioned from high school to adult program. Everything was going really great. And then somebody said to me, "Have you heard about the cuts to Medicaid?" And I was like, "No, I haven't heard." And I consider myself to be pretty tapped in. I said, "No, I haven't heard anything about that." And they're like, "Oh, it's going to be huge."
When was this?
This was January.
Okay.
And so I thought, oh, okay, you know, what do? You put it through the Google machine, right? I'm like, I'm going to Google this and see what happened. And sure enough, I was like, oh my God, there's huge cuts on the table. They're actually talking about this. And so I did a little more investigation and I attended a virtual discussion about this through the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. And their legislative advocate held a webinar and she sort of laid it out on the table. And it was probably an hour and a half and I started fine. And by the end of that webinar, I was like completely freaked out. And also like, okay, I'm gonna have to do something here. And I've advocated in the past. I mean, I worked on a bill that made it illegal for insurance companies to discriminate against kids with autism. So I've done advocacy before, but this is way more than I ever anticipated.
This is a big bite.
This is the elephant is big. That's exactly right.
What have you in your advocacy, who have you spoken to? Where have you gone?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple components to that. First of all, it's shocking how many people are on Medicaid and don't know that they are. Yep. So, I have had conversations with people who are like, "Oh yeah, that's really awful, but I'm okay. Like we're on Badger Care." I'm like, "Badger Care
oh,
is Medicaid."
Sweet. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, right. Or my kiddos in Katie Beckett.
Yeah. Like,
that's Medicaid. Right? Right. So, it's shocking to me how many people don't know they're in Medicaid. But I'm sympathetic because, again, you come in, there's 19 different Medicaid programs in the state. And so you come in under whatever program, like we came in under Katie Beckett, and you just sort of lose track that that's what it is. And I don't know that anybody ever says to you, it's Medicaid.
Right.
You just are like, this is what my kiddo needs. And so and so there's that component of just educating people out there because there's a train barreling down on them that they have no awareness of. So there's that. And then obviously the second component is, you know, talking to the people who are going to make these decisions about cuts. Mm-hmm. So we have, you know, I think made some attempts to, interface with, Congressman Weed, because he's my congressperson. And then also with, Ron Johnson, Senator Johnson.
Yeah.
And then, and the Senate is still a ways out on this. So
yes.
They're less, you know, so we're really concentrating on the House right now, but, so Senator Johnson, and then obviously Senator Baldwin. So we have, that's kind of what we're focused on. I mean, I have reached out to legislators in other places, but you know, as you know, I mean, they're kind of like, you're not in my district, right? You know, so, so that's what we're doing.
And I mean, this is my editorial. We have a congressman here, Mr. Tony Weed, that says, well, you're in my district, but I still don't care. So, you know, that's kind of what a lot of people are getting from him, unfortunately.
Yeah, we have struggled with that. We, you know, every time he's in district, we try to set something up with him and haven't had a lot of success, but we did go to his office. We did bring a couple of dozen individuals who are involved in Medicaid, you know, in a whole variety of ways, and shared our stories and got some good media on that. And then afterward, you know, had him say they showed up, they didn't tell us they were coming, I have to worry about the safety of my staff, you know, things like that, which was, I found disappointing.
Welcome to politics.
Yeah.
This was good, fun stuff.
Yeah. And I said, like, what about us is threatening? Is it my minivan with the inclusion bumper, you know, in equity bumper sticker? Is it my penny loafers? Is it my, what is it that scares you about me? Because we
penny
were really there.
Penny loafers are intimidating.
Yeah,
they can be,
right? Yeah.
I guess.
You know, we were really there in good faith. And I think our message continues to be for these folks that it's not realistic to expect Representative Weed to know all about Medicaid. It just isn't.
Right.
But we are experts, and we stand ready at any time to talk to him about our experiences and explain to him why these cuts are a bad idea. And I, you know, that invitation is an open invitation, and I hope he'll take us up on that before he, you know, places his vote.
Before he gets voted out. Hopefully. We'll see what happens. You know, I think in the next segment here, I do want to talk about, let's talk about these cuts.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's so much that is happening, and there's so much that is looming, mm-hmm. that people, they have no idea. And, you know, as we're in the 100 days of the lovely Trump administration, take two, the thing that's tough, and I think this is something that this is why he's able to get things done, because there's such a tornado of chaos, mm-hmm. and no one really knows, okay, well, is this happening? Is this, mm-hmm. no one knows what's happening in the next 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and so, he's able to, you know, weasel his way into doing some pretty bad things that hurt a lot of people. And there's not a lot of repercussions to him or the administration or people that are his ilk in that way. So I think this is important, because we need to know what's happening and what's coming down. So we got Lynn Meschke here, expert advocate on Medicaid. And we're going to be back with Lynn just after this here on The Rational Revolution.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Network. You got Mark Becker. Hey, if you like this show, you can listen to all of our shows on civicmedia.us as a podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. We're all there, including Medicaid expert, advocate, Medicaid badass. I learned I can say that, apparently.
I'll take it.
Yes, Lynn Meschke. And so on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about something that might surprise people with who Medicaid serves.
I would agree with that. So the estimate is somewhere between 1.2 and 1.4 million Wisconsinites are on some form of Medicaid. Wisconsinites, yes. It's like 80 million nationwide. It's huge. And so here in Wisconsin, that's 18% of Wisconsinites. And the statistic is that in a lifetime, 9 in 10, so So 90% of Americans are going to be touched by Medicaid in some way. So that covers 1 in 3 children. It covers 6 in 10 nursing home residents. It covers 1 in 3 individuals with disabilities. It covers school-age children who get like PT, OT, and speech in schools. It covers birth to 3. Wisconsin Medicaid, actually, I think Medicaid in general, is the largest single payer for mental health services, which is huge. Low-income working adults. And then I think one of the things that gets lost in all this is that there are a fair number of veterans involved or enrolled in Medicaid. So, and for 40% of them, it's their only form of insurance. So we are really talking about people who are our most vulnerable individuals, our friends, our family, our neighbors, members of our community. And so, yeah, it covers a wide swath of people, all of them who need it. And I will tell you, you know, as a family who we are Medicaid recipients, are grateful for it. This idea that people take advantage of it or don't value what they have, I am telling you that if you are a person who wasn't insured and now you are by Medicaid, you know, you are waking up every morning thanking your lucky stars for that.
We did when I just became self-employed. We had a baby and we had Melina, which is Medicaid.
Yes.
And it was, you know, Badger Care. And, because I mean, they're like self-employed, you're not like rolling in the dough, like most of the time,
right?
You know, and it's like, my joke is, boy, I'd like to take a paycheck at some point.
Right.
But you're
building your business.
Right. And to be able to have that security of not being nervous about, well, can my wife go to the doctor today?
Yeah.
Or is my kid, all right?
Yeah. Yes. I think the estimate is that it's 4 in 10 births are covered by Medicaid. It's high. And, you know, it also offers you the opportunity to start your own business or have your own small business and not have to make a choice.
Right.
And isn't that what we want? We're all about the, you know, capitalism and everybody having an opportunity and how we want to drive our economy. Medicaid is a bridge for an awful lot of people until they can afford some other form of care.
One of the things that's frustrating is, because I came from, I was in the Republican world, right?
Yeah.
And so often I look at some of the things that we as conservatives, and I'm not there anymore, but, you know, the royal we.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest, arguments against is we're going to cut waste, fraud, and abuse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, talk about that.
Yes. So, and you know, it's funny because now it's like all one word, waste, fraud, and abuse. They don't even separate it anymore. And we hear a lot of that, our Republican representative and then our Republican, senator here is that's a big thing for them. And so I guess, you know, I would separate those things out. So to me, you know, waste and abuse are somewhat subjective. And I think we're going to run into that with these folks where they're going to talk about that, but they're not really going to put a figure on it. They're not really going to provide any evidence. So I'm going to just provide you with some statistics. And that is that when you talk about waste, to me, what that means is there's a lot of fat in this program.
Yeah.
And for Medicaid, the administrative rate is 4%. It's lower than Medicare. So it is running on a very lean system. And then when you talk about abuse, I have heard any number of Republicans say that the figure that was floating around for a while was 15 million able-bodied people on Medicaid, you know, and I'm not going to go even with the able-bodied thing because in the disability, environment, I hate that word, but basically, essentially people who could be working and aren't, and then they're taking advantage of Medicaid. And what we really know is that 7 in 10 Medicaid recipients are working.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
And then the remaining 3 are people like full-time caregivers whose caregiving duties prevent them from working. It's students. It's, you know, there are exemptions and those completely legitimate exemptions. But the fact is that 7 in 10 Medicaid recipients are actually working. And then when you talk just about what our obligation is to our community. Like, is there a social contract? If everybody goes into this, if you're an elected official, it hurts my heart to know that you go into your job thinking that everybody, all of your constituents are in some way out to milk the system.
Yeah.
What a awful way to look at the world. And I, you know, were you frauding the system? No, of course you weren't. No. I have a friend whose son lost his job during COVID and has two beautiful children, was on Medicaid as a bridge, and, you know, till he could find another job, and got cancer during that time. Mm. And now, you know, is he a taker? Is he a moocher?
Right.
Is he a, you know, is he frauding the system? Good Lord, no. And the fact that he was able to get the care he needed without, you know, he was a young man, completely decimating his future, is exactly what this is about, as far as I'm concerned.
So, you know, and I think that, yeah, there's so much that the GOP will say, oh, this was bad and this was bad and that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you said it right, you know. Able-bodied, yeah. I mean, I'm able-bodied, but you know, in our situation, we weren't making a ton of money.
Yeah.
So shoot, I'm able-bodied, yes, but we still, you know, does my family not count?
Yeah.
Then, you know,
absolutely, absolutely. Well, and you know, this accusation that everybody's committing some sort of fraud is, you know, disturbing because this is closely tracked. I mean, our state does a fabulous job in tracking that, and what we know is that there are very, very few cases even investigated of Medicaid fraud. In 2023, it was 143 cases. Only 5 of those actually achieved convictions. And every Medicaid claim gets reviewed twice. So it gets reviewed here in the state, and then it gets sent to the federal government, and they review it. So nobody is getting rich off of Medicaid. And,
right,
you know,
right.
it's this perception that someone is getting something that I'm not.
Yeah, and I think a lot of this goes back to, like, oh my gosh, you know, the Rush Limbaugh welfare queen type thing, that boogeyman from the 1990s that is now kind of manifesting its way. So we're going to talk coming up about what is on the table to be cut, what is coming, and what should we all be aware of, and what can we do about it, as we talk with Medicaid expert Lynn Meschke here on The Rational Revolution on Civic Media Network. Welcome back to The Revolution. We've got Mark Becker. Hey, that's me. On the Civic Media Network, we are talking with Lynn Meschke, and we're talking about all things Medicaid. And, you know, I think it's so important for people to understand, you know, I think we talked about why it's important. I think we talked about who it serves. But I also want to talk about, like, why are we talking about this? What's the big shadow that we're looking at that might happen?
The big shadow that we're looking at is that the United States House of Representatives is now behind closed doors trying to figure out how to cut $880 billion from the Medicaid budget. So when I mentioned earlier that train that is barreling down the tracks towards us, that's what I'm talking about. And essentially what happens is that they will make these decisions, these cuts, and then they will sort of drop that in the lap of our state legislature, because the state legislature will get X pot of money and then have to figure out how to spend that. And if it's less money, there's only so many options available to you, right? So, one of the options is they can make up that money with the surplus fund that they have. I find that unlikely to happen in our current legislature, not to mention it's not sustainable.
No.
So if you do that for a year, you know, you're talking $11 billion worth of Medicaid money coming into our state. So federal Medicaid money.
So that's like Badger Care gets funded. That is federal dollars.
It's a match. It's 60% federal dollars and then 40% state dollars.
Okay. So the vast majority is federal dollars that come in.
It is. Absolutely.
And then is allocated out to people from there.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So your option is the state can make up the difference. Unlikely to happen.
Right.
The second thing is you can reduce the number of people who are enrolled in Medicaid. The thing of it is just because Medicaid stops covering these people, they don't go away.
Yeah, right.
So they still have needs. Yeah. So now you're talking about wait lists. You're talking about increased uninsured rates. You're talking about people who don't have coverage, but they're still sick. So now they're waiting till the last minute and going to the ER to get their coverage,
which
is exponentially more expensive. And we're all paying for that. So it's not, fiscally, it's a bad idea. You can reduce the number of things that Medicaid covers. But then what is that? What don't you cover? Do you not cover maternal care?
Well, mental health is going to go.
What don't you cover?
Suck it up and deal with it.
Exactly. You know? And then the other option is you can reduce the amount that providers are reimbursed.
Yep.
And I know people think that providers are getting rich off of Medicaid, but any provider that you talk to will tell you that they're often providing services and it costs them more than they are reimbursed for. And we already have a huge shortage of nursing homes, of caregivers, of facilities. And so if you cut what those folks are reimbursed for, they close their doors.
Yep.
And it doesn't just affect Medicaid folks because they're serving a Medicaid population, but they're serving our whole community. It's just not Medicaid people in a nursing home, or it's just not people on Medicaid in a day program. So if they shut their doors, we're all impacted by that. It's a shortage for the whole community.
So the number is $880 billion they want to cut from Medicaid. Mm-hmm. Has anyone given any indication of this is what we're going to do, this is the direction we'd like to go?
Yeah, there are a number of options on the table. The two that kind of seem to have risen to the top now, and then there could always be a surprise in this, is what they like to call work requirements. And work requirements, for those who don't know, is that if you are on Medicaid, you have to either prove you are working or prove that you are exempt from working or should be exempt from working. Essentially, what it does is it adds a whole lot of paperwork and a whole lot of administrative costs. And often,
it's that welfare queen that they're so worried about.
Yeah, right. And often these individuals are already struggling in life. So the idea of having to fill out more paperwork, they sometimes don't have access to technology or transportation or people who can help them. And the consequences of filling out your paperwork wrong or failing to meet a deadline is you lose your health care.
Yeah.
And then, you might be able to go back and correct that. But, what does that take? 6 months or a year? And what we know
is that— God forbid you have pre-existing conditions.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so, have some sort of health care crisis during that time. And what we know is that idea has been tried in other places. And in fact, it isn't really very effective. And we already know that 7 in 10 Medicaid recipients are already working, and those who aren't are exempted for good reasons. And then the second option that's on the table right now is the federal government gives us money to administer Medicaid. And they pay about 75% of the administrative costs in Wisconsin, and then we pay 25%. And so there's some talk about reducing that, going from 75% to, say, 50%. And Wisconsin DHS looked into that, and what they discovered is that it would actually cost us $93 million a year in order to do that as in the state budget, just to provide the same level of services. So, these are ideas that are going to cost our state money. And the question is, are we willing to pony up the additional money that it takes for this lost revenue? And I wish I could say yes, that I had faith that as a state we would come together and do that. But I don't, because when I watch these state legislative town halls and I hear our state legislators talk, I hear them parroting these things about waste, fraud, and abuse, and all that sort of thing, providing absolutely no evidence that that's happening. But they know that people will hear that and believe that. It's the single thing that I hear the most when I talk to people about
Medicaid. Is the waste, fraud, and abuse?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There are people on Medicaid who shouldn't be there. There are they would say, illegal immigrants. There are undocumented
food stamps. People get thousands.
Yeah. You know, and none of that is true. Right. But when your legislator tells you that and you've been primed for a decade or more to believe that, it feels right to you and you buy in.
When you've talked to elected officials, and if you say, like, you realize this is not true, when the cameras are not there, when they're not being recorded, do they get that? Do they understand that?
I guess what I can say is I assume they have access to all the information I have
and
more.
Right.
Right? Because they just have to pick up the phone. Some aide in their office picks up the phone and calls somewhere, calls to DHS or calls to Washington, and those statistics appear on their desk like magic.
Yeah. Rob Coles was in talking about how there was the legislative research thing.
Yeah.
You can call them and ask, hey, I want historical data on XYZ. Mm-hmm. And it is there in a 100, 200 page document, mm-hmm. neatly put on your desk mm-hmm. in a day.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, and it's interesting because one of the organizations that our federal legislators have access to is the Congressional Budget Office.
Yes.
And so we have legislators out there who are saying, we can make $880 billion in cuts, but don't worry, it's not going to be your son because he deserves Medicaid.
Right.
It's not going to be, you know, no one who needs it is going to be hurt by that. And the Congressional Budget Office has studied that and said that's absolutely not the case.
True.
And there is no way to get to 880. You could cut every other program that committee oversees, and you would still be hundreds of billions of dollars short of this $880 billion goal.
What's the timeline for that?
So they are working on the budget reconciliation bill now in the House. The Senate is kind of parked. My theory is they're waiting to see how bad it gets for the House before they do anything. So they're sort of parked. The House is working behind the scenes on their bill, and they will sort of debut that in a markup hearing. And that was supposed to be on the 7th.
So this was supposed to already happen.
Yeah, this was all supposed to really be done and dusted by like February or March. But the outrage has been so huge.
Good.
And Medicaid is the thing that's holding that up. So it was supposed to be the 7th. They were going to have their public hearing. And that they don't hear from constituents or anything like that. This is just, they present it, they talk about it. There's an opportunity for people to make amendments. Not if you're not in the majority.
Right, but, right, right.
So that was supposed to be the 7th. Now it's been pushed out to the 12th. And then, you know, who knows? Because honestly, when senators like Tammy Baldwin and others talk about how many calls they're getting on this, it is the single, that and public education are the single, you know, or the two issues that they hear the most on. So it is possible that they are essentially paralyzed by the knowledge of what happens if they announce these cuts. But say they're not. Say they have their markup. They go ahead with the $880 billion in cuts.
Where did that number come from? Was that a Trump thing? Was like, hey, you know.
I don't have any idea, to be honest. Like, I assume there was some sort of, well, actually, I do sort of know in that they are aiming for $4.5 trillion in cuts in order to fund extending the 2017 tax cuts. That's the goal. Yeah. So I imagine that they took, you know, that total and then sort of a percentage goes to this committee and that committee. You know, I'm not privy to that. But the number is $880 billion. So if when the markup hearing happens, maybe they make some modifications, maybe they don't. Then because this is a budget reconciliation bill, it's going to move really fast. So my guess is the House is going to almost immediately, once they have their consolidated bill and they've had all their markup sessions, I'm thinking that they're going to vote on that really, really quickly.
Yeah.
And then that obviously moves to the Senate, right? And the Senate can say, we'll take your language and all of your cuts and we'll pass it exactly as it is. And then that makes my heart stop because literally this could be done and dusted in no time flat. I don't think that's going to happen.
I think
there's going to be enough pushback. But the goal is, I think it was to have the president sign this by Memorial Day. Obviously, that's not going to happen.
No.
But I think I want to say we're sometime out in July. So, yeah, I mean, this is when, if, you know, and I hate to say when, if both of these pass the House and the Senate, it is going to move very, very quickly. And I worry that advocates will not have enough time. That's why I tell people, if you have something to say, now is the time to say it. Call your legislators, because this is going to move fast. And I'm worried people won't have enough time to respond and lay out why all of this is a bad idea. It will pass. There will be cuts. And then people will be like, oh, my God, that applies to me.
Right.
I didn't know that. And the whole system will just fall apart. And then this isn't like flipping a switch where you turn it off and it all goes away for 6 months. People come to their senses and then you flip the switch and it comes back on. It doesn't work that way.
No. And I would imagine that the House would want to get this passed quickly because they've got their elections coming up and they want the most time between doing something really freaking stupid and their
they
re-elections.
They want to separate themselves. And they're counting on constituents having very short memories.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, I don't have a short memory and nobody in my group has a short memory. And I will be everywhere that people will have me to remind everyone that, you know, and I'm assuming because Representative Weed has said that he will vote yes. You know, I will be everywhere that I'm invited and a lot of places that I'm not to remind everybody that he voted yes for this because it is unconscionable. And, you know, he should the just forget the moral part of this. The economics of it and what this does to our community is, you know, absolutely devastating. You're talking about statewide $11 billion, 30,000 businesses get Medicaid funding. You know, in the in his district alone, that's 135,000 people are covered by Medicaid. And $1.6 billion comes into our congressional district from Medicaid. That's 4,300 businesses. So, you know, if I can't appeal to our legislators on the moral grounds, right, and the social contract and how we take care of ourselves and that's the Wisconsin we believe in and all that, that's fine. I'm willing to set that aside. But let's just talk about the economics of this because it will be devastating. And all of those people who work for all of those businesses that get Medicaid money, they buy groceries, they buy cars, they buy homes, they pay rent. They do all of these things in our community. The tentacles are deep, and we are going to feel the economic. I mean, forget the health issues and all that we're going to feel. We're going to hit huge economic problems.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen. Here we're talking with, again, Lynn Meschke. Thank you so much.
Thank you for
that discussion.
Me.
And let's, get out, make those phone calls. Thank you so much. We'll be right back with my thoughts here on the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
I love this song. You know, it's interesting. We have, you know, just another band out of Boston. So next week you're going to hear a segment that we recorded ahead of time with Senator Tammy Baldwin. But you're also going to have a guest host who I want you to, I really hope that you have welcoming and keep an open mind. This guy is Jerry Bader, who is a very good friend of mine. I knew him when he was, as I say, a loudmouth conservative talk show radio host. And he's really had an incredible journey with his life, and he's become he was always a never Trumper like me, but you know, he found God and found his passion. He's a pastor now, and he takes that and he focuses that into trying to serve the most vulnerable. He has a trans son who he is a fierce advocate for, and the poor, and he serves the most needy in the community. And he's going to talk about parental estrangement. And that's going to be a fascinating show. So I really want you to tune into that because he's had a fascinating journey. I hope he talks about that a little bit. And what he's going to say, I think, is going to be really interesting. And I also want to touch on a couple things. You know, we talked about like the social contract. Like, what does that mean? And, you know, we're recording this today where they had the white smoke. And it was fascinating. I was at work. And I think we talked, this is the third week in a row we talked about religious crap stuff. Sorry. And I'm a former Catholic. And so it's interesting to kind of follow that process and the procedure of electing a new pope. And, you know, and the pope's name is not a president, so that's cool. But to see a shocking thing, it's that the pope is from the United States. Holy cow, what an incredible thing. And I think there's such an opportunity that the Catholic Church will have to, you know, as America has, let's say it, we've kind of been a bully. I think the Pope has an opportunity to be humble like Francis and show the world kind of the right way to do things, you know, and I'm excited to see how that goes. You know, I've talked about it last week and I think the week before about what faith is. And I said that for me, when I left the church, it's kind of a freeing thing. You know, I'm not necessarily saying that there is a God or there isn't and all of that stuff. I'm not debating that. I'm just waiting for God to smack me on the back of a head with a fungo bat and say, I'm here. You know, so if that happens, great, I'm listening. But if not, it's a really neat thing to be able to put my gratitude in the hands of the people that it came from. You know, put my love and give that to the people who have earned it. And not to say that God hasn't, if they're there, if they're not, but you know, if I am loved, I can thank my wife, I can thank my friends, I can thank my children. And, you know, we talked about what an act of faith it is to just lay down and put your head on a pillow and look at who's sitting next to you and laying next to you. Tell them you love them and just have the faith that you're going to wake up the next day to spend more time with them. What beautiful gratitude exists just there, because there's nothing more pure than that. There's no, you know, we got to say the rosary before whatever or do that. We got to thank I'm going to thank you. I'm going to thank you. And I think that kind of goes back to the Medicaid discussion that we had. That if we're going to take care of the most vulnerable people in our society, then we need to do that. Pure. We need to do that. No filters. No, well, only if they're, no. We need to take care of the people who are needy. And I think that's really what has made America great for generations, because we understand that. We were a country who got sick of having someone's thumb pressed on us, telling us what to do, who we should worship and who we should give, you know, our pennies to and how much we should pay for tea, all that crap. The United States helped people in need. And if you want to call it a social contract, if you want to call it, you know, it's just what the United States was. I don't know if we are anymore, but we were the beacon of hope for so many because we did the right thing. And it might take us a little while to get there, but we got there. And you look at some of the things that we don't do anymore. We talked about it with Christina Dry about, you know, taking AIDS help from Africa. Now we see tens of thousands of people are dying because we're not there. Okay, that sucked. That sucks. It's horrible. And now we're looking at the very real possibility of having something like that happen, not in Africa, but in Alloway and in Madison and in Milwaukee. And that's not okay. That's not an okay thing. And if it's an American Pope that can shake us up a little bit, cool. If it's Lynn Meschke, cool. But I think at the end of the day, what we have to do is we have to be people who fiercely remind our elected officials and our friends that this stuff matters. And it matters by having these discussions of education. Take what you learned today in the show. And if someone says, well, yeah, you know, you got all these people that sit on their butts and don't do anything. Instead of saying, hey, well, yeah, let's talk about something else. Now, hold on. Let's talk about that. And you can fight misinformation with facts. And you can take that knowledge and change someone's mind. That is your power. Even if you can't, you know, sit at a table with an elected official, you can have a conversation with a friend. And that's where it starts. And I appreciate you letting me have these conversations with you, my friends. We're on the Rational Revolution. We'll see you next week on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.